by the end of May, I was essentially jobless, homeless, studioless. And part of that was super exciting. Part of that was like, not just a Band-Aid being ripped off, but like someone ripping off a full leg cast, maybe. So the boyfriend at the time and I, we talked and we said, let's just take our relationship to the next level and have you move in. As in, I moved to the States to begin a life together that we had talked about. So that's kind of where things were at that point.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Melanie Foreimer, on I'm Too Old for Dish It podcast. I'm Angie S., the founder of AngieS.com, link in the show notes, where I'm a health coach. If you want to work with me, you can get in touch via the website or email directly at hello@angie-s.com. So today I brought my third ever guest, Melanie, to come back on and talk about how her life took a turn since we last spoke. And how showing up with the truth is helpful to those around us, especially in an age of highly curated social media feeds. Yeah. Aren't we all guilty of that? And don't we just hate it? Okay. So in case you're not familiar with her last episode, Melanie was adopted, a drug addict, a teen mom, twice divorced with major health issues due to her weight. She bounced back from it all. And today she's come on to tell us about how she learned to welcome the challenges and lessons 2019 brought on. So without further ado, let's begin. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, girl. It's been a while.
It has. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay. So look, I want to give you a big, big warm welcome back onto the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I brought you on because I know that quite a few things have happened since we last spoke last year when you appeared in episode number 3 called Bounce Back. Where we talked about your background, your upbringing, being adopted, how you pull through addiction, health issues, being a teen mom, many, many things. And you uplifted us with your strength and your attitude. And, you know, that was something I just really, really appreciated. And so before we dive into this current stage in your life and what you've learned from it, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Well, I'm Melanie Foreimer, and Foreimer is a German last name pronounced Foreimer, but most people think I'm trying to spit at them when I say it. So Foreimer in English will suffice. I currently live in Brampton, just outside of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I say currently because I've been in 6 places since we last spoke.
Wow.
And this is not a place I'm putting down roots, which we will get to. But so currently I'm in the Toronto area. What do I do? Well, I currently do not have a day job. I currently do not have a studio like I did when we spoke. And currently, I am not working at all. I am doing whatever the hell I feel like right now.
When you say studio, because for the listeners who haven't listened to you before, is it yoga studio, correct?
Yes. So The last time we spoke, I had a yoga and Pilates studio, and it offered some other physical fitness, physical movement modalities, and I had run it for 3 years.
Okay, so for the listeners who may not have heard the episode, can you please just round up maybe where you were in your life when we last spoke, and then we'll dive into how it all panned out and how you got to be to where you are now?
Yes, absolutely. So when we last spoke in April of last year, April 2019, I had made the decision that I needed to close my yoga studio. The lease was up. It was just not financially feasible. It was breaking my heart a little bit, but I felt good once I made the decision. And so the decision had been made after 3 years of running the studio on my own to close the doors at the end of May. And during that whole time, and for the last 20 plus years, I've always had a corporate day job of sorts, a 9-to-5 gig that mostly has nothing to do with my passion job. And so at that point in my life, I was closing the doors on the studio, and I can now share with the world that I had also been living in my studio for 2+ years to save on expenses. I lived in the office that nobody really knew about except for a small select group of people. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to have to look at changing where I lived, obviously. Well, little did I know that just like 2 weeks after you and I spoke, I was restructured out of my day job.
So does that mean being made redundant?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. walked out.
You close your studio and you being made redundant 2 weeks later?
No, my studio was going to close end of May and I was walked out April 30th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you and I had last spoken, you know, there was a lot of possibilities once the studio closed. I had a relationship with someone long distance, 5 hours away in the States. But there was a lot of stuff about slowing down, taking some time to heal because I'd hit burnout stage. And so the universe clearly listened to our conversation because it said, well, she wants less on her plate. She wants to do more writing. She wants to rest and heal. Let's take away her job. I'm telling you, our manifestation powers, the universe listens, but it doesn't always do it the way we expect it to. So
sometimes you have to be more, sometimes you just have to be more specific.
Oh, not sometimes, all the time. All the time. So yeah, I found myself in a place where by the end of May, I was essentially jobless, homeless, studioless. And part of that was super exciting. Part of that was like, not just a Band-Aid being ripped off, but like someone ripping off a full leg cast maybe. So the boyfriend at the time and I, we talked and we said, let's just take our relationship to the next level and have you move in. As in, I moved to the States to begin a life together that we had talked about. So that's kind of where things were at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so basically, if I understand correctly, when you decided to close the studio, you still had the buffer of the corporate day job, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, but that buffer got taken away. So all of a sudden, you didn't have a day job. You closed the studio, which was planned, but without a job, it's hard to find a place to live, right? And so I guess fortune would have it that you had a relationship at the time. And so you'd already previously talked about, you know, taking a relationship to the next level and move in. And so I guess that sort of kind of pushed it a little bit forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so what did you do next? Did you then take up on his offer to move over?
Mm-hmm. I packed up my car. Now, just for the record, I have a small Kia Forte. I do not have an SUV or a minivan or a truck, but my whole life, my material possessions fit into this car.
Well, you lived in this, in the office studios,
yes.
The studio office. So I guess it's not, you can't really, you couldn't be having like loads of plants around without it being too obvious, you know?
No. But like, for example, I had a bed and I sold the bed. I had a dresser. I sold the dresser because he already had all his furniture. He already had his own hot house with basically everything set up.
Yeah.
So I moved all my stuff into my car and I drove across the border and I found myself in Pittsburgh, technically just outside of Pittsburgh. And we embarked on that journey together very suddenly. And of course, I arrived right when his three children were off school for the whole summer.
Oh, and can I just say, because many people may not know, you actually have a grown-up son, haven't you?
Yes, my son will be 26 in June.
Yeah. Okay, So yeah, he's a man. Okay.
Yeah. I'm actually feeling weird that he's closer to 30 than 20 right now.
And how old are you, Melanie, if I can ask?
I am 41, going on 42 in May.
Okay, so you're 41, we're both 41. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, so you then arrive in Pittsburgh.
And it gave me the rest that I needed. I didn't have to get up for a day job. I didn't have to manage the website. There was still some closure work that I needed to do for like a month afterwards related to the business. But he lives in the countryside. I would see deer almost every morning. There was even some mornings I saw turkey. So it was a very different space than what I had been accustomed to, which was both delightful and in some ways a little unsettling because there was so much I was getting used to. There was so much change. It's like the universe came in and did a pretty healthy sweep of extras. And I had to start from not from scratch, but I had to start from a very different place.
Mm. Well, yeah, you uprooted your life. And I mean, just moving in with someone else is a big, how do you call it? You know, so you have to adapt quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big transition. I mean, yeah. Not only did I move in with someone, I moved to another country without really preparing a checklist for how I was going to stay in the country and get work. I mean, we talked about a work visa and all the logical steps, but there was nothing confirmed at that point when I moved in.
So how did you do for money? Did you have a backup plan if the shit hit the fan?
Well, for those that listen to the first episode and for those that know that I'm pretty organized and I have checklists, but I decided to hell with it. And the message that I left you with the last time was surrender the outcome.
Yeah.
I took aim and I went for it. I took aim and I loosened the arrow and just went with it. So I did have some money. My company was very generous in a severance package that would last me several months, along with benefits when I'm in Canada. So financially, I was okay because he has his own company and he owned his own house. Financially, he wasn't really relying on a partner at that point. So it wasn't like he was expecting me at that point when I first moved in to come in and pay half of everything.
Good.
So my expenses weren't going to be what they needed to be. No startup expenses of, buying a new toaster or new this and that because his house was set up. So financially at that point, there was really no issues. So there was really no backup plan created. Also, I went into this with this is my life partner. And together we will navigate what life throws at us. And that's, again, that place where I surrendered the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'd say you did have a backup. Well, you may not have had a backup plan, but you had like a net anyway, because you had like you said, a severance package that could last you a few months. So that was actually already good. So let's say, I mean, I don't want to be dramatic, but I think something that's, it's not always easy to have, but I think it's good to have, is if you are, whether you're going on holiday with a new boyfriend or someone new you're like, hanging out with, or whether you're moving in with someone, it's good to have some money so that you can always leave, stay in a hotel, take a flight home, whatever it is that you need to do in case situation, So
absolutely.
I think if you go in and you have a few months, that to me, in my mind, that's my plan B. That's my exit. I'm good. But okay, so tell us, so how, because from what I understand, things have changed. So can you talk us through, you got there, followed your heart, so you're just going to go with the flow from what I understand.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, a lot happened in like the 4 months that I was there. He and I had talked a lot about the kind of life we dreamt about creating together. We were very aligned lifestyle and philosophy, which is why I didn't question this. I'm just going to pack up my car and move to Pittsburgh. But once I moved in, there were some real reality checks that took place. From he was at work all day, and all of a sudden I was expected to take care of his 3 children, which I had agreed to coming into it, knowing that they'd be home for the summer. And I knew I wasn't planning on working right away, and I wasn't able to work right away. But there was an understanding at the beginning about the timeshare between him and his ex-wife, the children's mother. And that changed very quickly when I showed up. So the 50-50 very quickly turned into 70-30, and I was the 70.
Right.
His hours running his own company, prior to me moving in, he'd been home every evening, 5-ish, 6-ish for dinner with the kids. When I moved in, I wasn't seeing him till 8 or 9 o'clock at night often. Mm-hmm. And so expectations weren't being met on that side. And I was navigating, this is where, my own responsibility shows up, this own accountability is, I arrived and I realized that all the labels that I had attached to myself had been ripped off like a Band-Aid.
What do you mean by labels?
I was no longer a studio owner. Mm. I was no longer a yoga teacher. I wasn't teaching any yoga. I was no longer a Pilates teacher. I was no longer a manager of yoga teachers, Pilates teachers, because I didn't have the studio. I was no longer a employee at my day job, an analyst. I was no longer a coworker with those same corporate day job coworkers. I was no longer a reporting employee to my supervisor. So a lot of things that I had really lived for the last 10 years, even before I owned my own studio, they were gone. They were completely gone. And I had, and all of a sudden, I wasn't just taking on new labels. I was being forced to take on new labels.
Mm-hmm. So part of your identity changed.
Oh, huge. And I had to question. I had to question myself. And then also from being a woman who was so busy, 40-hour work week, teaching 7 days a week, managing the studio, to go to a very different activity of taking care of three children ages about 9 to 13 in a home, and now having to take care of the home, doing laundry three times a day, doing dishes like four loads a day, and making three, four meals a day, and driving them to appointments, which is 45 minutes. All of that, my internal dialogue, my insides, so to speak, felt like they'd been turned inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very strange awakening.
Yeah. And I think that whole identity shift can, or like feel like it's being ripped off, does happen to a lot of us in different circumstances. But I do want to just clarify, because you said, you know, before you were doing a 40-hour work week and teaching and stuff. Just want to specify, you had a 40-hour work week corporate job plus a studio where you were teaching in the evening. It's not just a 40-hour work week. You had a 40-hour plus your own yoga studio. So you were teaching evenings and weekends. So you were full on, I guess, how do we call it? You know, the lady boss. So, you know, whatever, you were working to being at home, no occupation, but your occupation obviously changed to taking care of children, which obviously is a full-time job, but
and
quite demanding. So did you feel, I mean, on top of having what you identified with, you know, studio owner, yoga teacher, corporate job, co-workers, all of that stuff, did you feel a sense of that you lost your home, or did you feel at home?
Well, physically, material, I did feel the loss of my studio. I actually loved living there for many reasons. It was my own space. But I also really enjoyed the home environment that my boyfriend and I at the time had talked about. So I didn't feel that loss so much until I got into the new space. And as every day went on, it wasn't what we had discussed. It wasn't what we had thought was going to roll out. What I did feel the loss most of was, again, more internal, my internal home of who I thought I was, who I had worked hard to become. And all of a sudden I felt like I know I had a choice, but I felt like I didn't. I'm not sure if that makes sense. I knew I could have chosen differently, but being put into the situation, well, I just walked away from my whole life. And, you know, how much time do I give it? How much of a chance do I give it until there's finally too much that I can't agree to and I have to make a decision then? There was a lot of hesitation, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of self-doubt that showed up.
I can understand that. I mean, I think there's a very big difference between talking about moving somewhere and imagining what it could be and, you know, even have a plan for it, goals and what we think is going to bring. It's going to bring for us, because I think anytime we sort of uproot ourselves, and I've done it a few times, and I know that every time, you know, I uproot myself, there's a hope, there's like a new life, and there's, you know, but I still remember the first time I did it, it was a big slap in the face. I was 18, and when you were saying about the identity, I didn't realize until I moved to a different country, when I moved from home at 18, I didn't realize that how much my identity was attached to, first of all, living at home with my mom, to my friends, my social circle, three, the value I had in the country I was in, the languages I spoke that were relevant there. the education I had that was relevant there totally was not relevant when I changed country. I literally had to start from scratch. And it was almost like I was ripped apart inside, you know. It was really hard. And it spiraled down to, you know, what I was already experienced before with like this malaise inside. Was spiraled out of control and, you know, heavy binge eating, like really binge eating, my OCD like piked up, like the anxiety was out of control. And, but because all of a sudden I was in this, I didn't know who I was anymore. And I would guess I was very young, but I can totally understand what you mean by your identity, that inside, that identity inside, what you've created for yourself, who you are, what you worked so hard for is not there anymore. And you wonder where it's gone. And it's like the value you put on yourself, how much you've put it on the outside. And it's not easy to work that value from the inside. You know, there's so many quotes out there that says, you know, happiness from within. I'm like, yeah, we get it. But, you know, we cannot live in a cave like a monk and be like, I'm fulfilled on the inside. It's very different scenario when it happens in real life, you know, every day, you know, when you have to just make things work. So tell me, how did that, I guess, like bounce off between you and your then, you know, your boyfriend that you were living with? Like, how did that even?
Well, it's interesting because he had come from an 18-year marriage.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. They had established certain patterns and expectations around her role in the home. And once I came in the home, despite all the talks we had shared about creating a different life for not just each other, but for our new, we called it our hybrid family.
Yeah.
You know, me being quote unquote stepmom, even though there was no marriage, but our little hybrid family.
Yeah.
But he fell into patterns very quickly that he'd had developed over 18 years with his ex-wife.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And I was processing the loss of a corporate identity. I was mourning the loss of my studio, my students. And so what you said about, you know, really falling into a malaise really resonated with me because that's what started to happen. Mm. You know, with each day as things started to change, you know, I was like, well, I had a purposeful life before this. Where is my purpose now? And as time went on and I put my all into becoming this, you know, stepmom. And I do love kids. And I've actually been a stepmom before. I had three kids in the household, the same age as his kids. So I've been there and I was there for 4 years. So it's not like I've never taken care of three kids. I know what's involved. I really threw myself into that. And I tried to create time for myself, as we spoke the last time, to dedicate to finishing my novel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah.
Even though I was living in nature, which I wasn't before, I was in the middle of a city, even though I was surrounded by trees and wind and beautiful skies, and every night there was fireflies outside, I felt absolutely no creative spark in me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really struggled with the story and the editing. And the editing, by the way, for any writers out there, enjoy writing your story because the editing is the painful part. I was really starting to struggle. And then through my struggles, combined with his patterns, falling back into them, our relationship really deteriorated. And we had moments where, you know, I will use an example. He said, "You're not the woman I fell in love with."
Oh, that's always nice to hear.
Well, and this
But we never are, though, are we? The person's never the person you fell in love with because it's a imagination in your mind when you fall.
Yeah. Well, even beyond the imagination piece, you know, this is where I take responsibility. I should have said what I was thinking in that moment because I didn't say anything.
Mm.
I just took it. Mm. What I should have said, my thoughts were, "No shit, Sherlock. You fell in love with a woman who was managing a corporate gig, hustling with her own business, reaching dozens of people daily with her classes and her messages and her life coaching. Because the woman that's here right now is a stay-at-home mom." And I don't want to say it in a way that degrades any stay-at-home moms, but it was a very different woman. So like, duh.
Yeah. How did you go from that to staying at home, basically? Because you were thinking you didn't know what your next bit was, or you thought you were going to be writing. How come you didn't go, well, actually, let me try and find some clients. What was the reason why you kind of fell into this situation that wasn't right for you?
Well, there's a couple of layers to it. One, I did feel the burnout from when I was juggling all of that stuff. So
I don't blame you.
I had made a conscious decision not to overwhelm myself again. So there was a little bit of that. You know, there was an intentional piece for that.
To slow down a bit.
To slow down a bit. Mm. When I realized, so after a few weeks, after about a month or so, when I realized, okay, I've adapted to things, which in truth, I probably hadn't, but I said, okay, I've given myself this month of not worrying about it. I've given myself this month of not looking at my book, really, not really worrying about anything else except being here and being present.
Mm.
And so that's when I was like, okay, I need to start going to yoga classes to become part of the communities in the city. I need to maybe take myself out of the home into like a coffee shop. Pittsburgh, by the way, is awesome for independent coffee shops. It's just so quaint and so inspiring and so creative. So that was my intention, to start creating these experiences for myself where I could get myself back into, call it the flow of my creativity, and establishing my own roots, establishing my own connection in this space that he and I were navigating together. The challenge was, when I started to do that, there was so much resistance from him.
When you started to what, to look for other dynamics and build your own life outside of him?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, okay. That's interesting.
You know, an example that I could name was, you know, I was driving the children in to Pittsburgh, and it's about a 40, 45 minute drive to, like, say, a dentist appointment.
Mm.
And he would meet me there. But I was saving him the drive home and then all the way back. So I'd meet them there, and then we would just sit in the waiting room for an hour. The other two kids would be on their phone, and he and I really, it was not a space to create a deeper, meaningful connection. So I thought, you know what? If I'm going to drive into the city on my own time and my own gas to help with these kids, why don't I find a yoga class around the same time?
Yeah.
So I can drop the kids to their appointment, still help him, still be supportive, but then he can spend a little bit of one-on-one time with the two other children, because again, he's their father. To have one-on-one or more condensed time is still a challenge.
And he was there anyway, right? He was just
there anyway.
Yeah, no need for both of you there. Mm-hmm.
And then I can go to yoga class, make my way home, or meet them for dinner afterwards. I thought this would be ideal, but I got so much pushback.
How would that show itself? What was the pushback?
Verbally, it was, well, it's not my fault you don't want to spend time with our family.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Some of it was very blatant and obvious.
Wow. So he tries to give you the guilt trip. Wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
And then the other one would be more passive aggressive, not as direct of, well, if it's really that much of a hassle for you to drive them, just let me know and I'll come get them.
Okay. Okay.
So there's a lot of that showing up.
And you didn't see those patterns before, because you don't know that straight away, especially at the beginning. It's hard to tell.
Uh-huh. Where it really started to manifest in a way that was discomforting beyond that was, you know, he would say, you know, you have all this time to socialize and I feel like I have no time. And I'm like, hold on a second. Socialize? When do I socialize? He goes, well, you go to yoga classes. I was there for 4 months and I think I attended 4 yoga classes.
Yeah.
And I'm a teacher who's used to teaching it 7 days a week. And yoga wasn't, it's not like I was going for coffee with the girls afterwards or anything.
Yeah. I mean, you could go to yoga all you want and never talk to someone.
Right.
In the class. So, you're not chit-chatting in the middle of like sun, what's it called? Sun warrior, you know, a yoga pose or whatever.
Yeah. So there was a lot of negative communication from him about when I did actually try to make choices that still honored my commitment to the relationship and to our hybrid family, but start creating my own space.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of And I can go on and on and whine and bitch about what he said or did, but ultimately this is the situation we found ourselves in.
So how did this all, because obviously you're not there anymore. So
no. So
what happened?
Again, after that first month of, okay, now I'm ready to establish a few things. And when I got all the pushback, that created a, well, how am I going to create this life that I've talked about in Pittsburgh with him? But on the flip side, I was also discovering, I mean, I spoke to 5 different yoga studios who all showed a very keen interest in hiring me, but nobody pays cash anymore. I needed to have a legit work permit to teach.
Yeah. In the US, they don't miss about as well, I think.
Oh, it was a nightmare. And so met with an immigration lawyer to try and figure out what are the best options for me to get a work permit. A whole bunch of stuff showed up. And ultimately, even the immigration lawyer said, think you and the boyfriend could get married because that would just solve all your problems. And by that point in our relationship, that wasn't an option for either of us. No. He had his reasons. I had my reasons. In hindsight, it was a blessing that we did not choose to go that route.
Yeah.
But I had also throughout those months, found opportunities to come back to Brampton to lead workshops at a studio that was next to my old studio. So I had still found opportunities to come back and keep a little bit of my foot in the pond, so to speak.
And Brampton was the place just before you went to live and live with your boyfriend in Pittsburgh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Brampton in Canada. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I had been wanting to leave Brampton for many years. And so this felt ideal with the boyfriend, but then I realized, so it was basically August, end of August, early September that things came to that final point where we decided that living together wasn't an option. I chose to leave. The kind of life that he was now offering wasn't acceptable for me because, and the words that I used with him is, I had given so much of myself into this relationship, into the hybrid family, given up so much. I felt like there was almost nothing left.
Yeah.
And if I stayed any longer, there would be no coming back to who I was. And I really liked who I was.
Yeah. So do I.
So we decided it was time to part ways. I had proposed maybe if we wanted to continue long distance, we could try that, but he was very against it at the time. I said, no problem. And we decided to tell the children together and show them that we could still be friends afterwards. They could still stay in touch with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I left at the end of at the end of September. I packed up all my belongings again.
So how many months was that into?
4 months.
4 months. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
what now, you know, something to share, which is, you know, we touched upon this briefly before you started recording, is despite those things going downhill, our sex life is getting better and better.
Oh, that's how they make it. That's how they make it. That's how it's made. That's how sex is made. I'm telling you. toxic sex could be some of, yeah, I know.
But it wasn't toxic sex.
No, okay.
I have never been in a relationship where the sex got better when the relationship deteriorated. It's always been hand in hand.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But this was the opposite. We were exploring not just new sex positions, but new experiences. We were exploring being more vulnerable and, I mean, getting into intimacies that neither he and I had experienced before and realizing how much pleasure it brought us both. And in those moments, we felt more connected and in those moments, I didn't feel like I had lost myself. He was helping me find myself in those moments. So that's what made it very challenging, finally, for me to let go. I mean, I had an initial instinct to leave 3 weeks after I moved in when he told me he wanted more money from me.
Yeah.
But I stayed for other reasons. I stayed to give it a chance. So end of September, I moved back. And at the age of 41... tail tucked between my legs, so to speak, I moved back in with my parents who live about 2-ish hours away from Brampton, still in Canada, in a small village of like 600 people.
Yeah. It is. Okay. I want to talk about that next stage, but if you don't mind, I just want to, because you dropped a few bombs there in the...
Yep.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, I'd like to go over this. It sounds like, I mean, there's a few things I want to bring up. I don't even know. I'm going to start with the last one. You were saying about the intimacy, you know, and the sex and how you were showing vulnerability, and it was better than ever between you two in that, in the physical stage. To me, I don't want, obviously I'm not a shrink. I'm nowhere qualified to say what I'm about to say, but to me, it sounds like that even before the few things that you mentioned before about how, you know, what he was saying about, you know, or you know, if we're not good enough for you, or if you don't want to spend time with you, you know, all this controlling and passive aggressiveness that he was showing and insecurity. It sounds like maybe, I don't know from your side, but from, it's easier for me to look at him, right? In terms of, it sounds like almost like he was triggered. So it's, you know, like our body always knows and it feels comfortable around someone, but then our head and our ego and our mind kicks in and it's like start to create havoc. Because I think, you know, definitely with relationship, intimate relationship that we have with someone, that's when all our crap comes up, you know? I mean, it does for me anyway. It'll come up and our head will get in the way of something that can be really good. And that's why it's so hard sometimes to find out, okay, is it really the person that's an issue or is it my own triggers? And so it's very hard to make those differences. And I think it sounds like that he was definitely triggered on his abandonment issue. That's how it sounds like. It's almost like he, you know, he was trying to make sure that he was, you were giving him enough of you, of your time, so that he felt valued or something. But
there's definitely some abandoned things going back to his mom. And what's ironic is all the things he used to complain to me about that his ex-wife did, about controlling, checking on his phone and not letting him go out for dinner by himself or even go out for a beer with his brother or any of those things, all of a sudden he was doing to me. And in fact, at the end of August, when we sat down, he read to me his journal where he flat out acknowledged that he's been putting out my flame. He has been putting unrealistic expectations on me. He actually had a really beautiful moment of consciousness then. And sadly, it was too late at that point. Nothing had changed.
He realized he was trying to keep you small to keep you close.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's, yeah. I mean, and it is one of those things that, you know, it's like what they say, our coping mechanism becomes almost like how we persecute others as well, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. But so I'm just going to read out like some of the notes I made when you were talking, and you were talking about how, you know, you had so much purpose before you went over to Pittsburgh and then Brampton. You had like a purpose, you know, you were reaching out to people, you were coaching people, you were teaching yoga, corporate job. And now you didn't have that and things started to spiral down, and you were saying, you know, if I stay any longer, I'm going to lose who I am and who I've built, you know, so hard to become and who I love. And there's something that Kathy Heller from Don't Keep Your Day Job podcast, she says that the opposite of depression is not happiness, it's purpose. And I so agree with that.
Yes.
Happiness is fleeting. What do you know? Are you going to encapsulate happiness? How do you write it down? You know, but purpose is what gets us up in the morning. You know, it gives us hope. And it sort of makes sense that when you arrived and you actually went to take space, effectively things started to crumble apart a little bit, you know, and you had to assimilate in a different environment, you know, and you didn't get a chance to, I mean, you may have had chances, but I guess you wanted to keep the peace. And by keeping the peace with him, you kind of forgot yourself and did go out there and push back and go, actually, no, I'm going to go and do on a meetup group, or I'm going to go out for a coffee by myself, or I'm going to go to the movies, I'm going to go to yoga class and make friends or somehow something, you know? And I think that the last bit that really, I think is really interesting is you said that you had given up so much. And I think that is something that women especially, without being sexist, but I feel like women, you know, we do that a lot, and we do that in relationships, and we think it is something that is good, but somehow we end up, that behavior that has come out of love ends up choking your partner, you know? It ends up like, is mothering, it's too much. And effectively, we lose ourselves. And it's not good for us, and it's not good for them. And when we give up too much, the other person will almost resent us for it because they feel like they owe us for something they never asked for. Does that make sense?
And I think there's a distinction to be made too, that I agree with you, as women, we give of ourselves a lot.
Yeah.
Where it gets dangerous is when we give up for others. So we give of ourselves to others. And when we give of ourselves to others, there is no keeping score.
Uh-huh.
But when we start giving too much of ourselves, that crosses into giving things up for them,
mm-hmm.
doing it at the expense of ourselves, that's when the scales get tipped.
Yeah, like your social circle, for example, or making friends. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I know friends who are professional therapists who do that in relationship. You will not hear from them. Well, I'm thinking of one especially, but you will not hear from her the whole time. And I'm like, yeah, it's only a matter of time before it collapses because you've given up everything. And it's just, even people who are professional do it too, you know? And so yes. It's just as though, you know, it's... So before we go on to, like, you know, you're moving back and figuring mm-hmm. yourself out at 41, you know, moving back in with your parents, from that time you were in Pittsburgh living with your boyfriend, what would you do differently this time?
A few things. I probably wouldn't have moved in with him directly. I would have moved to Pittsburgh in a small studio apartment or something.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, that wasn't the option, I would have from the very beginning been more firm in the boundaries that we had talked about ahead of time, you know, taking care of the kids more because mom was working a night shift and didn't want to. That was not something I had agreed to ahead of time. And so I allowed these things to keep affecting me because I wanted to be the supportive, loving partner and to support my partner and all these things. And I do love those little kids.
Yeah, of course.
Although, you know, two of them are taller than me, I think. But that's a totally different side note. And right away, establishing my presence in the yoga community there for my own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the big one is when the boyfriend verbalized clearly negative things, instead of swallowing them and allowing them to turn into poison inside of me, to say something.
And that's so hard to do, though.
Oh,
that is so hard to do. I mean, I hear you. I we always wiser later. I'm always like, oh, I wish I said that. I should have done this.
Yeah.
I'm like that too. Because you want to keep the peace. And it's hard to ask for setting boundaries and ask and saying this is not okay in a way that's just, you know, straight to the point, easy, non-dramatic, is an actual skill that is not taught. And it's hard to do. It is hard to do.
The other part that shows up with this, and it goes back to a little bit of the we give of ourselves, where do we give up, and our standing in our voice, is something that really showed up for me. And again, this is, you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Of course.
But is this, when we fall in love with a partner, whether it's a heterosexual, homosexual relationship, that part doesn't matter.
Mm.
When we fall in love and set out on a journey together, we place our partner's words and actions at a higher value than of a coffee friend or a coworker friend. You know, if my girlfriend at work says, hey, Mel, it looks like you've put on a few pounds, that doesn't even graze me. But when our lover, our intimate partner, the person we're planning the rest of our life with, starts verbalizing or expressing displeasure or disappointment or just expressing negativity, it has more power over us, because in that process of falling in love and inviting them into your heart space, you've now brought them into your inner sanctuary.
Oh, yeah.
They can do way more damage. And I thought I had built my heart to a place where that wouldn't happen again. But it did, in a pretty poor breaking way, that I cracking into a million pieces way.
But that's what makes you human, Melanie. That's
Yes, absolutely. It's part of the journey.
Yeah, I mean, it can be as intense as, I mean, I say as intense, I don't know how to measure it, but it's like, you know, a parent or a child's words, it can really cut. So, but it's not because people mean to, it's just because they have that direct access to your heart, because the stakes are so high, they mean so much. Yes. That, you know, that if they were to disappear, it would hurt so much. I mean, touch wood, everything's fine. Literally touch wood. So I think, you know, so when we are with a partner, we are healing from, you know, relationships, you know, most of the time, even the good ones, we kind of like healing from a childhood wound. So that person has, if you open your heart, I believe they've tapped directly into that same space and they can really hurt you. That's why you see people who go back over and over again, maybe to relationships that are terrible for them.
Yes.
Because they are that hooked, the same way you can't just cut off from a parent, for example. If you had a parent who beat you up, you know, most of the time, most people have, I've got friends that still have, you know, relationships with that parent who I remember growing up abused them terribly. But now they're, you know, it's not something that you can just easily cut off from. So it makes, just makes you human.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I get emotional about it, but, and then I don't say it in a way to imply that there's something wrong with me or that I'm broken, but that this is a reality, that when we invite someone into our heart space, there is that vulnerability that's different than a more casual acquaintance or a casual relationship. So all of that affected me deeply. And when we split ways, I thought a distant relationship to support each other as we were going through this would be different, because all my past relationships, when it's over, it's over. Block and delete, move on, no more contact. That's just how my life has turned out. Yeah. And he had expressed he didn't want that, kids to still have contact. But within about 10 days of me leaving, he demanded no more contact, no more contact with the children. And, you know, saying that, you know, we needed to move on, et cetera. And I found out that he had already found a girlfriend by that point.
Wow.
So,
Oh, that hurts. Wow. Yeah.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is his pattern, and I need to, you know, I've since been able to take all the beautiful things about that relationship and the wonderful things about that man and recognize these are the things that I want to attract in my life again, without the bullshit, without the insecurity of him, without the stuff that brought the negativity in. And it is my sincerest hope, because he does have moments of true consciousness and awareness, that what he learned with our relationship, he is putting into practice with this new woman, and she is the benefactor of the bullshit I had to put up with, so to speak.
Yeah.
I do sincerely hope that that is taking place.
Yeah. But I mean, nothing is black or white. Everything's in the gray. So, you know, he's not all good or all bad. Same for you, not all good or all bad. So it's good.
Always.
You've got that. Can I ask you something about the pattern? Is that, he usually jumps from one relationship to the next? Is that something he had before?
Well, you know, he'd been with his wife for 18 years, and we met when they were going through a separation.
Yeah. Okay.
So there was that. Also, when we had been on a break for a short period of time, he had, and we had agreed to be romantically connected, but not monogamous. We weren't even in a relationship. We hadn't put a label to it. There was another woman that came into his life very briefly, and that took place. So I acknowledge that he doesn't like to be alone. And I don't want to get into the psychology of him.
Yeah,
but yes, there was a pattern there. And when I left, I had hoped to create a new pattern for myself by continuing a friendship with him. It was going to be tough, and I knew that, but I actually welcomed the opportunity to create something different for myself as well, and a different pattern for his children, who watched their parents tear each other apart. So, but that didn't happen. So no choice. So now I'm with my parents, 41, My life fits into my car, living in their guest bedroom in a town of 600 people, completely isolated. And all of a sudden, it hit me like a brick. It hit me like a truck. Depression. Yeah, and yeah. A complete sleeping in my bed all day, watching Netflix all day, not even looking at my novel, not wanting to talk to people, internalizing everything, struggling with the weight that I had gained over the summer, because I wasn't moving anymore. I wasn't working out and I was trying to cook healthy meals, but the kids were constantly complaining. And so long story short, I gained probably close to 20 pounds over the summer alone. Mm. So struggling with the weight gain, struggling with, you know, I thought that the universe had cleared my plate when I got ready to move in with the boyfriend, but no, the universe said, nope, nah, bitch, you got more to go. Let's get rid of everything. Relationship. I had fallen in love with Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh was also ripped away from me. I had developed really wonderful friendships with some of his family members. That had been ripped away. He has placed a demand on them to block and delete me from everything. So that was ripped away. So I was left with, in my thoughts at that time, not only nothing, but more than I thought I had to give. So October was one of the worst months of my life.
So, I mean, it's yeah. I am really sorry to hear that. It's never, the being glued to the bed and just watching Netflix all day. And I mean, it's normal. You don't want to look at your novel. You're going through a breakup and breakup, not just with him, but with, you know, a place,
family, home, everything.
Family. Yeah. And, you know, that's always hard. And it's, you know, it is normal to feel, you know, the rug has been taken off. And so how did you pull through it? How did you?
Well, you know, I wish I had a magic pill that I could share with everyone that this is the one thing that'll help anybody, because I spent most of the month going through every moment, every word, every exchange of those 4 months that I spent with him, questioning where did I go wrong and what could I have done differently and did I make the right choice in leaving? I mean, I now know I did. I mean, the fact that he had a girlfriend within 10 days proves certain things. So I knew all this logically, but my emotions, everything was so attached. And then I experienced a mini health crisis that very, very few people know about. That caused me to go, you know, to the hospital, and I ended up having to deal with some health issues, which I won't go into too much details now, but it was a very scary moment where I didn't know what was going on. And then...
would you be open to say what it was? Or, I mean,
yeah, I had an ovarian cyst burst and...
Yeah.
That's, but in a way that, because I also have my tubes tied, there was a whole bunch of nonsense going on, and the blood loss was pretty severe. The pain was.
Oh, that's, yeah.
I would rather give birth again. That was, you know, for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's, it is, oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that's what it was. But the circumstances around it, and when I went in, and the doctor's hypothesis that I might have been having a miscarriage because they didn't know my history was like, excuse me, I've had my tubes tied and I don't actually know if my ex-boyfriend had a vasectomy or not, but wait, like miscarriage, even though my logical mind knew that really wasn't a possibility, my emotional body kind of was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I'm pregnant. It was ridiculous. And so that was a result for me that I had to process. And that triggered the worst day emotionally, and brought me to a place I never thought I'd be. And it was the place of seriously contemplating a very, very large bottle of sleeping pills. And I sat like that for 8 hours, and It was almost like Gollum from Lord of the Rings having this conversation with himself of, nobody likes you, but I have a friend. Nobody's your friend. You know, this, really, like, I'm glad nobody heard my internal dialogue, because straitjacket would have shown up. So I did that for close to 8 hours that one day. And by the end of it, there was no magic aha moment. There was no one thing. I mean, thoughts of, well, my son is still here. And thoughts of, I don't truly want to end my life. I just want this to stop.
Yeah.
So a lot of acknowledgements, a lot of little pieces. And then finally, just this calm came over me that said, okay, it's time to rise. I know our last episode was called Bounce Back, but there was no bouncing. I was feeling too heavy to bounce.
Yeah.
So, but at that moment, there was just this calm that came over me and this feeling of, okay, it's time to rise. It is time to allow all the things that have served its purpose but are now in the past to burn away into the ashes, and to rise from those ashes and reclaim who you are. And you are now being given this incredible gift of having that opportunity without tying or binding yourself to outside labels of corporate day job, studio owner, yoga teacher, all these other labels that I had really truly attached myself to. And it was in those moments that this awakening took place around the story I had been writing since 2013, that without changing the story, I was able to now go back into the narrative and change some wording slightly, or the position, and really embody the story of Moira.
Is that for your novel?
Yes, Moira is the main character in my novel. To rise from her ashes, you know, I was really able to, I really feel like I was able to give her story the voice it needed to make this a story about becoming the hero of your own life, becoming the hero of your own story, versus another romantic novel out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I slowly started taking actions. I'd reached out, and it turned out a girlfriend needed a roommate. So I moved in with her back into Brampton, the city I had tried so hard to leave. And I decided that if nothing else, in 2019, with all of the loss and all of the things that I had been given and taken away, and if the only thing I could accomplish, this goes back to, again, that feeling of purpose and purposeful life, is to publish my novel, then I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
So I got really heavy into the editing, and my novel, actually, after starting it in May 2013, I was able to publish it on December 1st, the winter solstice of 2019. But had I not experienced the summer with the ex-boyfriend, not just the struggles, but the beautiful love connection, the intimacy, the energetic exchange of so much, I wouldn't have been able to give that the voice it needed to in the novel. The story didn't change, but the voice that I was able to speak it with and write it with did change. So for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah. I think, you know, first of all, I'm glad that it sounds like, you know, you're still healing from it, but you've learned quite a bit from it. So it feels like you've come full circle. Look, you've birthed your book now. Your book is out. You know, you've published it. So that's a huge achievement. And I think what we need to do, you know, whether we go into a relationship, for example, I think it's important to remember to hold on to ourselves, because it sounds like, from what you were talking about your experience and now how you feel, you know, what you've been doing recently, is like, it's almost like you caught yourself again. You caught yourself. And that is what we need to always make sure, I feel, that we hold on to ourselves, because then we won't get into this pattern of giving up so much. And I think it's that part of, like, being aware that when we fall in love, we have to be aware that we need to do things that are counterintuitive. And by that, I mean, we have to make sure that we don't just spend every single minute of every day with the other person. I mean, there is a part of the blossoming of relationship where we like in a cocoon and we, you know, we have to water it so much. We're building that that connection with the other person. But I think even then, we have to really make sure that we see our friends, we do our thing, because, you know, that is part of how it's not just good for us, but it's good for the relationship too. And when you were saying about that day at the end of, you know, I think it was the end of October when you were considering, you know, for a whole day of, you know, basically ending it, was that after, you know, just feeling those feelings, it just dissipated and something else came along. And I think that's the thing that sometimes in society or we're not being taught to do is to, what has helped me in the past is sometimes to, instead of like trying to push down feelings, which eventually just come back up in a big mess, is that to feel the feelings, whether it's anxiety or whatever it is that we're feeling in that moment, to be alone in a room where you can be safe, to just let it all out and just go down into that darkness. Because once you have felt it properly, it's almost like you've exercised it, because sometimes your body's just trying to tell you, just feel it out, and just trying to think about why you feel this way, what it's reminding you of. And it's like all of a sudden, like the sky will clear up, like any storm in nature. Nature does it all the time. It cleanses, you know? And I think that was just a beautiful thing you were saying. And you've got a way of saying it that's a lot more poetic than I just did. And I think it is, yeah, I think it's the fact that it sounds like you've learned so much from it, and the fact that you have, it's an experience. And then you're now armed with more tools in your box for next time. And just remember to hold on to yourself. And I think all of us are guilty of it, to do it, to just, you know, we don't want to do, you know, our thing anymore. We just want to spend time with the other person because it's so much fun and exciting.
Yes.
Especially when the sex is great. But
well, yeah, yeah.
That's like an extra hook in you that's so hard to let go of, you know. It is really, really tough. And, you know, and you've done good. You know, you thought about going back, but you're like, no, I'm holding on to myself this time and I'm just going to feel like shit right now, but it will go away. It will.
Well, I wanted to share with you a huge moment of appreciation for you and this podcast and this opportunity, because when I first started noticing you were, you know, you kind of prompted about maybe looking for more guests, you know, there's this part of me that said, oh dear God, if I go on to this podcast, I have to admit to all the failures. I will have to share that the dynamic person that people got to know on the first podcast took a wrong turn, that I am not always positive, that I'm not always dynamic. And I had that moment of resistance of, I don't want people to know that I had such a place of darkness. I don't want people, I'm okay with people knowing that I moved and I moved back and I don't have the relationship anymore. Those are, you know, I can keep those very surface.
Yeah.
But with you, thanks to our connection and our chat before, I had a big fear of, I shouldn't do this because I will be admitting to something that feels very scary and vulnerable. And what is the perception going to be? Will people recognize that Melanie is still a coach and a mindset coach and a life coach? And I went through this whole internal dialogue, and then I came to this moment of aha. And in the words of you and I said, fuck it, do it.
Yeah. But I think it's you know what? It's interesting that I understand why those thoughts would pop up, because that's my sabotage thinking as well. But effectively, I think it's a great thing to do this, because for you to come back on and explain this, because I find that especially online, Instagram, and you name it, sometimes what I can find very demoralizing for me is that portrayal of everyone's perfect lives. And I think I'm guilty of it too. I find it really hard to expose myself, show, you know, what the things that are hard. And I think, weirdly enough, I'm probably a lot, because I'm a very private person. And I think I've opened up a lot more here on this podcast. I say things that I don't tell most people. I don't know why I feel more comfortable. I guess I'm, you know, we feel always braver behind the microphone alone in the room. Okay. But I think this is great. You've come on and showed that life is not linear. We will go through good and bad, you know, even for me, like, you know, like just yesterday, I was just like, why am I feeling this way? You know? So I think we all, you know, every week when I put out an episode, sometimes there are a lot of really stressful moments. It's not always pretty. There's a lot of things to deal with, you know, and it's, I think it's great that you've come back on and said what you said, because life isn't always pretty. It's not always, you know, we do the best that we can with everything that we have and that we know. And I think it's great you've come on, because it's very hard sometimes to see out there the online world that can be very fake, and it makes us all feel more isolated. And it's isolation will definitely create depression and anxiety. And I think it's good that more people nowadays can speak up and stand up. And so I think it's great. And I don't think it makes you less of a coach. It makes you a more empathetic coach. It makes you a more understanding person. Someone who's never known any struggle, how can they understand, you know? And so I'm going to ask you the finishing questions I ask all the guests. And I know I'll ask you this last time probably, but it'd be interesting to see what your answer would be now. Mm-hmm. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
18-year-old self was already a mom, so that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I would tell myself to don't stress so much about the corporate ladder. I would tell myself to appreciate every moment with my son, even if it meant not providing for him financially the things that I thought I had to. And I would definitely tell myself that I don't have to live up to anyone else's expectations, that I have the power to be the author of my own story and to really create a life that I love, and to hopefully start doing it before I'm 41.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And what do you not put up with anymore?
Controlling behavior by others. That's definitely one thing that's huge on my list right now. I would like to say that I am really learning about what my boundaries need to be and how to hold firm to them, but I'm still working on that. So I would have a different list for you in about 6 months on what do I not allow in my life anymore.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Melanie. Before we end, can you please tell us where people can find you and where they can buy your book?
Well, my book is available on Amazon, on all the Amazons, amazon.com for the US, .ca for Canada, .co.uk.
Worldwide Amazon.
Worldwide Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's called Lady of Fire, The Immortal Elements, and it's book one. My website is www.melaniefrome.com. And you can find me on the Instagram and the Facebook just by my first and last name as well.
I'll put all the links in the show notes so people can find you. And thank you so much, Melanie, for coming on again and telling your story. Thank you so much.
And thank you for creating this amazing space for everyone to learn, and even the guests to relearn a few things.
Thank you. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, follow on Spotify, for all the other platforms. Whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com, or come and find me on Instagram. I have two accounts. One is Too Old for This Shit Podcast, and the other one is Not Too Old For with the number 4. Links in the show notes. See you next week, and until then,
ears and health inappropriately.